We want to talk about being courageous like Caleb. And if it weren't for the fact that I had the title up here and had given you an outline already, I would ask you who you thought the most courageous Bible character was. I get some interesting answers when I ask people about Bible things like that, who your favorite something is. But if I asked you who the most courageous Bible character was, a lot of people would give a lot of different answers, certainly. With a lot of things of this nature, of course, we have to say other than Jesus. Because everybody says, well, Jesus, of course. Jesus was the smartest. Jesus was the wisest. Jesus, you know, he was sinless, so he was perfect. Jesus, you know, he was courageous because he faced death on the cross for us. And you can go on and on about all the different things that Jesus comes in first. So we say, well, okay, other than Jesus, who in the Bible would be your favorite character, the most courageous, the wisest, the strongest, and of course, some of those things, it becomes pretty clear. Somebody says, well, who's the strongest character in the Bible? Everybody says, well, Samson, he of course was. And if you ask, well, who was the wisest? Well, of course, that was Solomon. And you can ask who was the most spiritual man in the Bible, and people say, well, maybe some would say Paul, or some would say David. David was a man after God's own heart, so he must have surely been a very spiritual person. And so, when you get beyond those that are specifically mentioned that certain people had that characteristic way above the level of others, then you start to say, well, okay, what about courage? There are a lot of people in the Bible that were very courageous. A lot of people did courageous things. A lot of people lived courageous lives. Several people faced death courageously even. You think about Stephen being stoned to death. You can think about people like Daniel with the lion's den, or Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But I'm here to challenge you that I believe Caleb was the most courageous individual in the Bible. Again, other than Jesus, of course, who gave up his heavenly home to come live here and face humanity and face being a human and all of those things that took a tremendous amount of courage that we can't imagine. But we're going to look at Caleb this morning, and I hope that by the end of this, you'll agree that Caleb was quite probably the most courageous person we read about. Mark Twain once said, courage is resistance to fear, mastery of fear, not absence of fear. You know, some people say, well, I'm not very courageous because I get afraid sometimes. Everybody gets afraid sometimes. The question is, can you overcome that? Can you master that fear? Can you resist that fear and do what you're supposed to do anyway? That's where courage lies. Courage is not the absence of fear. And it's important that we understand that. Because sometimes we think that, well, if we're feeling any fear, then we're not being courageous. The fact of the matter is, the only time you can be courageous is when you are feeling fear. If you're not afraid, then it wasn't courage. If you just didn't know that it was dangerous to do a particular thing, that's not courageous to go and do that particular thing. But if you knew it was dangerous, and you were afraid of that danger, and you did it anyway, then that was courage. Now sometimes there's a thin line between courage and foolishness. It is good for us to have certain fears of certain things. God intended us to be afraid of certain things. He gave us pain receptors throughout our bodies to let us know when something was hurting us, to warn us away from those things. And there certainly are dangerous things that can kill us. And so sometimes we say, well, what's the difference in courage and foolishness then? Courage is when you know it's dangerous, but you know it's the right thing to do. Foolishness is when you risk your life for no good reason whatsoever. That's foolish. It's not courageous. It's just thrill-seeking at that point, wanting to get that endorphin high, that adrenaline rush from it. Now, that's not courage. I want to talk to you for a minute about Pauline. Perhaps I've mentioned Pauline before, but I want to remind you about her. Pauline was a young lady in her teenage years during World War II and just prior to World War II in Germany. And at the time in Germany, there was a law that said that no one was to give Jews any more food than they were rationed. And they were rationed to get 900 calories a day. Now, for those of you who have ever done a diet, you know that 900 calories is far less than even your most starvation diets usually would not go below 1,200 or 1,000 calories a day. And so basically the German government under Hitler, the Nazi regime, had said basically we're going to starve the Jews so that there will be more food for the Germans. Pauline was a German girl, so she could have all the food she wanted. But she had some Jewish friends, and one of those friends came to her one day and said, Pauline, I'm hungry. I'm so hungry. Can you just give me a little something? Now, it was a crime punishable by imprisonment or even death to help the Jews to break the law. And Pauline knew that. But she decided that she couldn't let her friend starve to death. She was going to make sure her friend got some food. She went home that night, and at supper, as she was sitting there with her parents eating, thinking about her hungry friend who probably wasn't eating that night, she made a very bold and brave decision. She decided to tell her parents what she was planning to do. Now, you have to understand the power of the Nazi mentality. Parents turned their children in, children turned their parents in, siblings turned each other in, spouses turned each other in to the SS in order to save themselves. So Pauline's admission to her mother and father of what she was thinking and what she was planning was a dangerous thing to do. She could have just snuck some of the food out of the house the next day. She had made arrangements to meet her friend at a certain time the following day to give this friend some food. But as soon as she mentioned it to her parents, her mother got up and began to fix a big pot of soup. And she said, your friend is going to have other friends. Because of this one teenage girl's decision to help someone, even though it was against the law for her to do it, and because she talked to her parents about it, they wound up not only feeding those friends of Pauline that day and many more days to come, but even got to the point where they hid several Jewish people from the Nazis and saved them from the concentration camps and the death squads. She was honored by the Jewish community some years later, probably in the 80s, as a very special person because of this little bit of courage that she had to go against some of her other friends, the norm of her day, the law of her land, to do what she knew was the right thing to do. When she was interviewed about this, and someone asked her, when did you become so righteous and courageous? She said, the righteous did not suddenly become righteous. They just refused to go over the cliff with everybody else. I want to talk to you about somebody in the Bible today who didn't just suddenly become courageous, but just refused to go over the cliff with everybody else. Caleb is never mentioned in the New Testament, at least not by name. He's mentioned several times in the Old Testament, depending on whether you count the lands that are named after him or at least share his name, which possibly could mean they were named after him. It's as much as 36 times he's mentioned in the Old Testament, but never once in the New Testament. Isn't that something? Most of the Bible heroes that we have from the Old Testament are mentioned time and again in the New Testament. You read about David. You read about Solomon. You read about Job and Elijah. And you read about those guys in the New Testament, but not Caleb. And that's interesting to me. The only place that I think he might have been referred to would be Hebrews chapter 11, verses 29 through 34. The Hebrew writer has spent, and I really believe that the Hebrew letter was actually a written down sermon. If you read it, it reads like a sermon outline. Just like someone preached it and someone was there writing that thing down. But the Hebrew writer records this: by faith the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land. Caleb was one of those people. But the Egyptians, when they attempted to do the same, were drowned. By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. Caleb was one of those people that was there for that. By faith Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she gave a friendly welcome to the spies. Now this was not the time when Caleb was a spy. This was later on. And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms. Well, Caleb was involved in conquering some kingdoms. Enforced justice, obtained promises. Caleb certainly did that. Stopped the mouths of lions. That sounds like Daniel there, doesn't it? Or maybe Samson. Quenched the power of fire. That sounds like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, doesn't it? Escaped the edge of the sword. Caleb did that on more than one occasion. Were made strong out of weakness. Became mighty in war. Caleb did that as well. And put foreign armies to flight. Caleb was involved in some battles where that happened as well. So even though Caleb's never mentioned specifically, we read about him and people like him in these passages at the end. The Hebrew writer just ran out of time, like many preachers often do, and like I probably will today, ran out of time to say everything he wanted to say about this. That's another reason I think it was a sermon. He says, for time would fail me to tell you these things. If you're writing a letter, well, you can write as much as you want to write. Time doesn't fail you. But if you're preaching, there's always a clock back there telling you time's up. So we want to think about Caleb. And so we're going to have to look to the Old Testament to learn about him. But I want us to realize as we're heading into this year, and we're only a week in, so we've got a whole year, we need to be courageous like Caleb. And in order to be courageous like Caleb, there are some things we need to learn. We need to learn, first of all, to stand for what is right. And hopefully we already know that, but we need to be encouraged and reminded to do that. And looking at biblical characters is a great way for us to be encouraged and to be reminded by looking at those examples. That's why they're there. The things that were written aforetime were written for our learning, Romans 15:4. Tells us. We're reading these things to learn how we ought to live. And so as we look at Caleb, stand for what's right. In Numbers 13 and verse 30, something very interesting happens. The 12 spies, 10 of whom, if I read their names to you, you wouldn't have remembered them or recognized them. And the only way you would recognize them now would be because I just told you there were 10 of them, and if I read the names now, you'd recognize them. But nobody that hasn't just memorized the entire Bible remembers those guys. In fact, even though I've preached about Caleb, I've preached about Joshua, and I've preached about those 12 spies before, and I've read it, and I've listened to it, I can't remember any of those 10 guys' names right now. I'd have to turn to it and read it to find their names, because I can't remember them. But there are two that we do remember, aren't there? And who were those two spies we remember? Joshua and Caleb. And we almost always list them in that order, don't we? Joshua and Caleb. And probably because Joshua became Moses' successor, he gets a lot of the notoriety. He gets a lot of the fame. Everybody remembers Joshua, even if they don't remember Caleb. But let me ask you this question. When they came back from the Promised Land, and 10 of the guys stood up and said, "Oh, we can't do this. There's no way. There's giants over there. And that land over there, oh, it just will eat you up. We can't do this." Guess who stood up to answer them? It wasn't Joshua. It was Caleb. Now, everybody expected Joshua. I mean, Joshua's Moses' right-hand man. Everybody knows Joshua's going to take Moses' place when Moses dies. And so, you know, you expect him to say what Moses would have him say, but not Caleb. Verse 30, Caleb says, "But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it.'" These other guys had just said, "There's no way we can do this." And Caleb says, "We are well able to overcome it." We have to stand for what's right. Caleb stood up for what was right. Notice, he didn't have to wait for somebody else to stand up and then follow them. Now, obviously, if somebody else is standing for what's right, we need to follow them. We need to support them. We need to encourage that. But we need to be able to stand up for what is right, even if nobody else has. Caleb was the first one to stand up for what was right. And that takes more courage, doesn't it? Which is harder? To be the first one to speak up, or to agree with the first person who spoke up? Well, it's always harder to be the first one to speak up. That takes more courage, especially when you're going against the grain and against the crowd. Secondly, to be like Caleb and be courageous, we need to learn to stand even if we stand alone and in danger. In Numbers 14:10, we see, and this is after Joshua stood with him, but Joshua and Caleb were alone in a group of 600,000 plus men of fighting age, not counting their wives, their children, the men that were too old to fight, you know, and the boys that were too young to fight. Just the fighting men was over 600,000. So you add a wife for each of those guys, some aged parents for several of those guys, some children of some of those guys, you can easily get to a couple million people. And of that 1.5 to 3 million people, Joshua and Caleb are standing there by themselves. Everyone else is against them. Not just a lot of people, not even just, well, we're in the minority, you know, it's like 48% of us and 52% of them. No. Two people against millions. And Joshua and Caleb stood there, and all the congregation said to stone them with stones. And they would have done it But the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the people of Israel. If God hadn't showed up, Joshua and Caleb were going to die that day. Now, the thing about it is, God doesn't always show up to save you. We talked about Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and God saved them. But there were a lot of people God didn't save, too. There are a lot of heroes in the Bible, like we talked about Stephen earlier. God didn't step in and save him. James was beheaded. Peter was imprisoned and later was executed. All of the apostles, except for John, as far as we know, died of some unnatural death. And they weren't the only ones. A lot of the prophets. Look at Abel, Cain and Abel. God didn't step in and save Abel from Cain. Abel died and he was righteous. God doesn't always appear to save the day for you. Because God's more concerned about your spiritual life than your physical life. And if saving your physical life will help with your spiritual life, He'll do that. If saving your spiritual life means losing your physical life, then He'll do that. He does what's best for you. That doesn't always mean saving you from trouble. But in this case, He had plans for Joshua and Caleb. And He wasn't going to let them die. We're going to have to move faster. I could spend hours on this. I love Caleb's character. He is an amazing person. Now let's move along. Third, to be courageous like Caleb, we need to stand even against those we thought were on our side. Even against family and friends. We don't do that very often, do we? I mean, our family and friends, they're on our side. The people that are on our side, well, we're not going to stand against them. The children of Israel and Caleb and Joshua, they're all supposed to be on the same side. But when we're standing for what's right, sometimes people that we love and care about will not stand with us for what is right. And that's sad, but we need to face that sad fact and be ready to stand for what is right anyway. Look at Numbers 13:31. Then the men who had gone up with him said, "We're not able to go up against the people, for they're stronger than we are." And these were people, they had gone on this together. They'd been together on this adventure, spying out the land, in danger of getting caught. Now what would happen to spies that got caught spying out the land? Well, they could have been executed right there on the spot. Then in Joshua 14:6-8, the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite said to him, "You know what the Lord said to Moses the man of God in Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses the servant of the Lord sent me to Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in my heart. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. Yet I wholly followed the Lord my God." How easy is it to go along with the group? The whole group saying, "Oh, we can't do it this way. We can't do that. We can't do this. We've got to do this." How easy is it to just say, "Okay, we'll go along with that." But Caleb didn't. Even though it was his own kinfolk. Now they weren't, he says brothers. They weren't literally his brothers from the same mother and father. They were his distant cousins. They were all descendants of Isaac and Jacob. They were their descendants, certainly. So they were cousins of a distant sort. But they were family. They were all part of the same nation of Israel. They were all part of the same congregation, if you will. Sometimes there may be a time where we're going to have to stand against our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ because they're doing something that's wrong, and we have to stand for what is right regardless of what they're doing. We can't go along with them just because we're brothers and sisters. We need to trust God if we're going to be courageous like Caleb. In Deuteronomy 1:34-36, the Lord promised, He swore, that none of the men of this evil generation will see the good land except for Caleb, he shall see it. And to him and his children I will give this land. But that didn't happen right then. In Joshua 14:9, Joshua is reminded of that. Moses swore on that day saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance for you and your children. Caleb's reminding Joshua, remember what God promised me. It had been 40 years. It was 40 years. That's a long time to wait for somebody to do something they said they'd do, isn't it? But he trusted God and he waited. We need to see as God sees and not as man sees. Man, according to Numbers 13:32-14:4, saw some things in a very interesting way. They brought the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they had spied out. They said the land, a land that devours its inhabitants, the people were great height. There we saw the Nephilim, the son of the Anak, the giants, in other words. They saw giants. And we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers. And so we seemed to them. See, they saw themselves as grasshoppers compared to these big giants. And they assumed they must have seen us the same way. You see, that's how men see it. And then everybody cried all night. And they said, oh, I wish we'd have died in Egypt. And on, blah, blah, blah. Our children, our little ones, you know, they're going to be prey. Oh, it's going to be horrible. Whiny, bratty, lack of faith, lack of trust, seen only with human eyes. Let's choose a leader and go back to Egypt. After all they'd seen, after the plagues of Egypt, after crossing the Red Sea, after being fed in the wilderness with miraculous manna and given water to drink from a rock and having poisonous water turned to good drinking water, all these things that they'd experienced, getting there. They'd come there and they got there, and when they got there, they still couldn't see things the way God sees. But Caleb, along with Joshua, said, the land we passed through is a good land, an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land. They are bread for us. In other words, instead of the land eating us up and them seeing us as grasshoppers, we see them as toast. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Don't fear them. Caleb and Joshua looked at things different than the others. And if we're going to be like Caleb and be courageous, we're going to have to learn to look at things differently than the others. I told you we'd run out of time. We're going to finish this. I had something else planned for the second service. We're going to finish this instead. And we're going to go ahead and take a stop right here and offer the invitation, but we're going to come back to this because we're out of time. Are you being courageous like Caleb? Are you seeing things the way that God sees them? Are you putting your trust and faith in God instead of man? Are you willing to stand for what is right, even when you're alone, even if you're in danger, even if it's against those friends that you have? We're going to look at several more reasons here in about an hour. We'll look at some more of the things that we need to do to be like Caleb. But already we're starting to see what an amazing man he was and how much like him we ought to be if we want to please God. If you are not courageous like you ought to be, if you need to work on that this year, if you need the prayers of the church to help you, if you're not a Christian and you need the courage to step out and say, I want to become a child of God. Whatever your need may be, please come as we stand and as we sing.